Now, I have a really interesting, wonderful woman in our studio today. Her name is Nora Gibbons. And Nora is, it's very difficult to introduce Nora because she has such vast experience and in voluntary and private sector. But most of all, I'd like to introduce her as a person with great compassion and sensitivity.
Thank you very much. I'm not sure I deserve all that, but thank you.
Okay, Nora. So tell us about your new venture. You have many ventures, but this is...
Well, what I'm presently doing, I'm really interested in and delighted to be asked by the Minister for Justice to do it. Where he asked us to do a study, not an academic study, but and that's quite important, talk to people who had experienced family members being murdered or at least one of the family being murdered by someone who was a close partner of theirs,
yes.
Not by a stranger, but by someone that they knew intimately and very well.
Yes.
And what the minister asked us to do and what we hope we will do is give him some guidelines on what should happen in any community, because this can happen in any community, unfortunately. What should happen to support those left behind, both immediately and in the medium to long term, because any of us who think about it, and we don't normally have to think about it unless it happens in our family or our community, it is devastating for those left behind.
Yes.
That somebody that they knew very well, who would have been in and out of their houses, and for the men listening, I'm afraid it's usually men who are the perpetrators who commit these offences against their ex-partners, their wives and their children. It is the most devastating thing to happen. And I've spoken now to a lot of the families who see themselves as survivors, and they would all say the same things. And the big thing that struck me, and I used it in the title of a presentation I was asked to give last week by Women's Aid, the sound of silence. If you picture your home and children particularly in it, or grandchildren running round, and suddenly those voices, those footsteps, they're all gone. They're all gone. And not only are they gone, they're gone forever.
Mm.
It's not as if they've moved to Australia or somewhere and they'll be coming back, or you might visit them. That won't be happening. And I think it takes maybe sometimes a good few years before people realise that that's actually what's happened, that these important people are gone out of their lives, and that all there is when they go home is silence.
Yes.
Absolute silence. Mm-hmm. And the silence continues through the night and it's still silent in the morning. Mm-hmm. So I titled my talk, The Sound of Silence,
yes.
Because that's what families said to me.
Yes. And what is so interesting about this study is, as you mentioned, that it's not an academic study. And
no.
I think that's really, really important, because you're talking to people that it happened to.
Yes.
Yes. And tell me the difference in that. I mean, Nora, you have a lot of experience in this research that has been done before. What are you looking for in this one, this study?
Yeah. This is what I'm looking for, is to learn first of all from the families who've had this terrible trauma happen to them, to see what's their view of what happened. Sometimes they explain in great detail what happened.
Mm.
And I think it's my job on behalf of the state to listen to them and to make sure that I have understood what they're saying.
Yes.
And then the other parts of it are that we ask people, well, how were you treated by the forces of the state, by the Gardaí, for example, by the HSE, by the Child and Family Agency, whoever might have been involved?
Mm.
Did you find that helpful? Whenever they tell us what supports they got, and what would have been helpful? What did you not get that you think, look, that would have been particularly helpful? And one of the things that they said to us is, you know, this happens. Usually the Gardaí come to tell you what had happened. They leave a Garda with you, a family liaison person. Some of them were excellent. Some of them, unfortunately, did not appear to be very empathetic or very... They didn't come across. They came across a bit hard. I think it is traumatic for any member of the Gardaí, for any member of the HSE or anybody else. So I can understand what they've done. The professionals have put the barriers up, if you like, in order to try and protect themselves. Because
Is it, Nora, because it's a domestic, it has been always seen as a domestic issue.
Yes.
And then people say, this is private.
Yes.
This word private comes up in this society a lot.
It does.
Doesn't it?
It does. And, I mean, of course, nothing could be further from the truth.
Yes.
This is the most awful things to happen in our society. Yes. And women are beaten up in their own homes all the time.
Yes.
There's a small number of female perpetrators, and I don't want to pretend that there's not, but 97% are men.
Mm.
And it's to somebody that they would claim to love. And I remember when I was a social worker in England, and I'd be trying to persuade, which of course I shouldn't have been at, I should have been doing it slightly differently, a woman to leave a violent man. And they would say to me, but Nora, they love me.
Mm.
And I would be saying what I thought was nice, sensible things like, that's not what love is, you know. But of course, they were terrified, they were frightened. Sometimes we didn't have a refuge to offer them. So if you have nowhere to go and you don't have family around you, it's very difficult, and you're in most danger just when you leave those kind of relationships.
And when anyone starts an intimate relationship, it's intimate in some sense. And then they promise you the moon and the stars.
Yes. And you want to believe that.
And as young people or even older people, they may come from a bad relationship and they have a new relationship. And I suppose it's very difficult because it's a very sensitive issue. It's an emotional issue.
Yes.
And even if they go and say it to a social worker, they try to find excuses why they should remain in the relationship,
rather
than leave it.
Yeah. And I can understand that. And as I've got older, I understand it more.
Yes.
And I have total compassion for victims who are caught in that scenario. Mm. But what we have to do, I think, is produce some information, and particularly that helps the Gardaí, that helps social workers, that helps public health nurses, that helps all of the people who are the professionals to look out for the signs that something is not right.
Mm.
People don't walk into cupboards, so black eyes are obviously are marks.
Or doors.
And doors, yeah, they don't, you know.
Yes.
And we've had some powerful writers here in Ireland who've written plays and books about what happens. Mm. One of them was The Woman Who Walked Into Doors.
Mm.
Anyone who comes in and tells you they walk into doors, don't believe it. Don't tell them you don't believe them, because that wouldn't be helpful.
Mm.
But start to tease out, is there anything else going on? I would say to teachers, look at the children coming into class. Is there somebody coming into your class that you're concerned about? Do you see a lot of marks on their arms that should not be there? And because a lot of children get hurt in episodes of domestic homicide, domestic violence. And one time I remember being told by someone that if he was beating up his wife, that would mean that he wasn't beating up his children. And I always thought, that's nonsense. The children can hear this, they can see it. And as they get older, they often get in the way to protect their mum. So they are being traumatised every minute of the day. And this is what they think then is normal family behaviour.
And these children may do very well in school as well.
They want to be doing well. And they're afraid to go home with a bad school report because they know what's waiting, you know.
Yes.
It's not, I'm disappointed in that now, and I'm sure you could do better. It's a belt around the head and, you know, a kick maybe. And for a small little boy or a girl, that's a shocking thing. And we must remember, as adults, we are much bigger and stronger than children.
Yes.
And I don't agree with hitting children at all. We wouldn't hit another adult and expect to get away with it. That's an assault.
What you're saying really is that even so-called professionals need to be trained.
They need to be trained.
Retrained all the time.
All the time.
Yes.
And new things has emerged. For example, most of the people who perpetrate domestic homicide, domestic murder, or wipe out their whole families, their partner and their children. And we've had an example of that a few years ago here. Mm. Thankfully, they're very rare, and we want to keep them that way.
Yes.
It's not an acceptable way if you're, you know, financial troubles or whatever. But so we want to keep it that way. But they've now come up with a very controlling person. So from the minute they meet you, they're wanting to exclude you from your family. Mm. These are the warning signs. So you're not allowed to go for Sunday dinner unless I'm coming too. And people would have talked to us about, with hindsight, I could see that he was wanting to control everything she did. She never had a penny in her pocket, even though she was earning as well as he was, and perhaps better. Perhaps that was part of the issue. But that was all in his head. It was nothing at all to do with why they were together. But that this control, control of the children, control of their partners, and not being able to go out with your friends, not being able to meet your friends, not being able to go for a cup of coffee because he wouldn't be there to watch what you're saying and to hear in case you'd take this secret outside of the family home. So it's very interesting stuff. We would have described it differently. So it's interesting to see the good practice from the past come back, but now it's dressed up, if you like, in more professional language.
Yes.
And that's fine, as well as when we're talking to families, when we're talking to women, that we don't use that kind of language.
Exactly.
Because they don't know what you're talking about. Mm. Whereas they appreciate, and they're well able to say what they want to say, provided you talk to them as a human being with respect and dignity, which they are just entitled to the same as any other human being.
In other words, you're saying is use their language, what they're using.
Use their language.
Because they have their own language to keep the secret as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Isn't it?
And they're well tutored, if you like, by the oppressive person in the family.
Mm.
And it doesn't mean that every leader or every man in a family is going to murder you. Of course they're not.
Yes,
we're not suggesting that for a minute. But there are some where there are a lot of warning signs.
Mm.
But the warning signs, I think, are for professionals to look out for, because there's no point in me knowing all the signs if I'm the victim and I'm frightened, so that every time I hear the key in the door, I'm wondering what's coming in the door to me now. And of course, as a mother, one tends to protect the children.
In my little experience I have in this area is that most of the women go to the GP and that's the first. They don't go to psychiatrists or counsellors or anyone else, social workers.
Yeah.
First the doctor and usually the GP.
Mm.
And I think that's the first call they make.
Yes.
And that's fine by the perpetrator,
yes,
because she's sick,
and they think
that she's sick as well.
So
it's okay.
So it's okay.
So how does I think the GPs have a very important role to play?
They have indeed, and unfortunately now, as you know, and I know from the media in particular, we don't have enough GPs.
Mm.
We don't have enough GPs to spend time with each individual patients. Some of them are run off their feet and they barely get you in and give you a pill for whatever.
Mm.
But they have a very important job. And what they can do is listen, first of all, that's always listen. Say to, as they would if it was a physical ailment you had, I think that reminds me of, you know, something or other. This is, and then just ask the question, how are things at home?
Mm.
Or I noticed Johnny doesn't come in here anymore. And sometimes Johnny will be in the waiting room because he will want to monitor exactly how much time she spent with the GP and what were you talking about and what did he want to know. Because they're conscious that any interaction she has outside of the house could lead to that becoming unstuck, you know, and that's what their power is in their control of everybody.
Yes.
You know, leaving the children to school every morning, so they've no chance to interact with the neighbours. It's amazing what can be done to keep people isolated. Sometimes they move them down the country and they live out in a country area where there's no neighbours, whereas in the city here, you know, the neighbours are all, we're all part of the same mix, and people get to know you when your children
even
get
then,
to know.
Even then, people, this is still a secret, in the city.
It's still absolutely a secret.
There's less connections in the city.
In the city.
In the communities.
Yeah.
Actually, they do their own business. You know, it's private.
They
may have the little value of the squinting windows.
Yes.
They know through the curtains.
They know through the curtains.
I don't think they're going to say anything.
Anything, yeah. But I think they're beginning to, everybody's beginning to talk up a bit more. Mm. And I think some of the other type scandals that have happened here, like the cervical cancer issue, for example, where women have, at great cost to themselves, come out and fought publicly and told the public what was going on. Mm. So I think people are taking a lot more notice now of what used to be private and say nothing about it.
And this study is going to make it even more
well, we
open.
Would hope so. We would hope so.
Transparent.
And if I could just appeal to anybody listening now who is a victim or was a victim of domestic homicide or familicide, if they wanted to come forward and tell us their story. It's all done in confidence. Nobody can discover who was in with us or who wasn't in with us. So we've had very high profile people come in, and we've also had ordinary misses or, you know, grannies sometimes where the whole family have been.
Oh yes, that's what it's about. Family.
It's about family.
Family side means family. It could be grannies.
It could be.
Or mothers, you know,
mothers,
older mothers. There's a lot of elder abuse.
There's a lot of elder abuse. And we are not dealing with elder
no,
abuse.
No, you're not. Yeah.
We would, but obviously if somebody did ring and say, look, I'm the victim of this, we would refer them. The HSE has a very good service now. And we would refer them to, we just kind of, if they told us what area they lived in, we'd be able to say, look, this is who would deal with that. And now I'm confident, years ago, there was nobody there.
Yes.
But now there is a very good elder abuse modelled on a child protection model.
Yes.
But it's there.
Yes,
and
because of drugs being involved, and I've heard stories of that parents being beaten up,
been beaten up for money. By their
So these are
sons and daughters.
These are parallel things.
These are parallel things.
Yes.
But within the, you know, if you had time and if we could do an academic study on it. You'd love to spend time delving into the whys. You know, what is it that's created that monster?
Yes.
Or is he just a monster?
Yes, but then we have to shine a light on what's happening
what's
now.
What's happening now. Yeah, we do.
So
we
how do you go about this study? Do you go and interview people?
Well, we invite people to come forward for interview. I took a decision early on because of other work I did in the past that we never know what's going on in anyone's family at any one time. So that we wouldn't be dropping cold letters or cold phone calls into somebody's life. So what we try to do is get as much publicity as we can that encourages people to step forward themselves. Because if somebody was to contact me and it was the, for example, my child's birthday anniversary or something like that, or the anniversary of when they died, I just, you know, and families would have said to us, don't do that. Don't cold call. But I would, I did a lot of child abuse inquiries in my past, and you would, including people who were raised in industrial schools. I was involved in that here in Dublin and also in Belfast. And it is so difficult for people to come and talk about the most difficult things, particularly for men find it extremely difficult. And you wouldn't want them to be there other than by their own volition, that they choose to come. And then we're good, I think, at making it as easy as we can for people. And certainly that is my whole motivation, is that people feel heard, that they feel listened to, and that when they're making suggestions about what to do, that's what I spoke about last Friday at the Women's Aid Conference. This is what people tell me they didn't get, and this is what they tell me they need. So therefore, we're going to build a recommendation and a system for the minister to Now it's up to the government, I'm afraid. I can't implement it. And there's so many good reports around, and what you discover is they've sat up on some shelf. But the minister himself has met many of these families. They tell me that they were impressed by his listening and by his empathy for them. So I'm fairly happy if we don't get in the way of an election. I'm very happy that this minister, if he's still the minister, when the report comes out, will want to implement it. And we will certainly do it in a staged way so that, you know, if he can't get to the end point, that he can get some points along the line.
Do you not think now, people have always said the deficits are in the law and how it's implemented. Mm. So there's a lot to be changed, isn't
there?
There's
a lot to be changed. Mm. But it's not that the law isn't there in many situations.
Yes, it is there.
It is there. Mm. And we've good laws, and we have progressive things happening in Ireland. As we know, for the last 20 years, things have progressed. When before that, it was years before anything would move. So I think the laws are there, and the whole thing is about implementing it and one person's interpretation. So we need to educate our district court judges because a lot of these things just get to the district court and they don't get any higher than that. So we have to start with them. And it's not that they're uneducated, that's not the right word, but we have to give them the knowledge that they need when they see this in front of us, not to think private matter, family matter. Because sometimes you think, look, families have said to us, the perpetrator of these heinous acts, they have more rights than the survivors have, you know. And who's looking out for my sister's right, for example? She's lost her life. We've lost a daughter. We've lost a sister. We've lost her children. So there's a whole generation that is no longer with us. And who's looking out for their rights? So I think we have a bit of balancing to do. Yes. On the other hand, of course, and I fully recognise this, we're all innocent until proven guilty. And there, you know, people say, well, why do they get legal aid? Of course they have to, because to vindicate your rights, the kind of system we have is court-based.
Yes.
Maybe a mediation service would be more helpful for some people, but not for everybody. Mm. But if I say I want justice, and that's one of the words I used on Friday, because that's the first thing people say, I want justice for my sister. I want justice for those two beautiful kids that were brutally murdered. And it often is very brutal. You know, people think nice things, you know, it's not a bit nice. Children have been hit with hatchets and all kinds of things. It's unbelievable.